Welcome into the Level Up Experience. On this episode, I sat down with Christopher Laporte, the founder of Reset. We did a live stream on LinkedIn and YouTube. Just want to thank people that jump in on those live chats. Make sure you subscribe to Level Up Experience on YouTube and have the notification bell click so you know when we are streaming. Chris has been a part of the esports scene in some form or fashion since around 2005, especially when it comes to the fighting game community. And with my brother being involved with the Smash Melee scene for a number of years, it's something that I wanted to have him on to have a conversation around. So glad that Chris was able to take the time. We discussed his experience with running Insert Coins, a facility from 2010 to 2015. We discussed the esports scene in Vegas and how that mindset around the industry has changed over the years, and also how the casino industry views esports. Before we jump in, I'd like to thank GG Locators for sponsoring the show. Good Game Locators is a contract staffing and executive search firm, highly specialized in sourcing and placing top-tier talent in gaming, esports, and extended reality industries. Whether you're searching for your next hire or the next step in your career, head over to gglocators.com to learn more. Just want to take a moment to thank you for the 5-star rating and reviews and subscribing to the podcast. So if you could fill in those 5 stars, that's how we get the word out about the content. Really do appreciate it. Here's a word from GG Locators, then my discussion with Christopher Laporte. If you'd like to get in touch with me for whatever reason, feel free to send me a message on LinkedIn. You can find me at Chris Reed, C-R-I-S-R-E-E-D, or on Twitter at TheLevelUpEXP. That's at TheLevelUpEXP.
Hey, everyone. It's Iris Moon with GG Locators. I'm here to tell you about an exciting new senior-level material artist opportunity that my team and I are currently working on. We're working with a well-established independent studio in the live music capital of the world, Austin, Texas. I'm looking for someone who has prior gaming industry experience, a highly diverse portfolio, strong knowledge in Maya or other 3D software packages, and strong knowledge in Unreal Engine 4. This is a full-time opportunity and the chance to work on some awesome AAA titles as well as original IPs. If you're looking for a solid company culture and the ability to have your own ideas heard, then reach out to me today at imoon@gglocators.com. I'm looking forward to hearing from you.
Thanks for taking time today, man. I want to go ahead and just dive right in. Love to start with your background, kind of in the esports and gaming space. And looks like that kicked off around 2005, right?
Yeah. So I moved to Las Vegas in 2005, graduated from Rutgers College, so East Coast boy, and actually came out here to do medical device sales. Different world, different life. However, I found myself attending the very first Evo in Las Vegas, which is the Street Fighter competition. And basically jumped like head first into the FGC on the West Coast. You know, I had my time for a little bit where I was enjoying, you know, just the New York arcade scene, which was super dope. And, you know, that was, in my opinion, the beginning of esports, but that's my philosophy. However, in 2010, I just threw away my history of, it's good, Miles. I threw away my whole world of medical device and just that industry and opened up Insert Coins. Which really just captured my passion of video games. I wanted to bring video games into the spotlight in Las Vegas. You know, I remember going to the mayor of Las Vegas and saying, you know, if Las Vegas is the entertainment capital of the world, we are sorely missing the video game scene. And so, you know, basically since 2005 to even last year, you know, Evo every year, building up video game events, working with the Nevada Esports Alliance, where we're really helping to curate esports experiences with the casinos. So, you know, long story short, I'm the video game guy in Las Vegas.
Yeah, good stuff. Again, if you have a question or comment at any point in time, feel free to do so. We're going to pull those up and throw it up in chat. This is hopefully a really cool conversation. I've been looking forward to it. So tell me a little bit about Insert Coins. For those that may have not have seen what Insert Coins was, kind of like nightclub for gamers, per se.
Yeah. And, you know, a little preface here is where Insert Coins may have been 5 or 10 years too early, as esports may be 5 years too early right now. But it's here now. It's here today. And essentially what Insert Coins was why go to a bar and just watch sports or just go to a nightclub and just sit there. I wanted the opportunity for people to go to a bar, be surrounded by just lots of people who have the love of video games and play games at the bar. And as we were developing the concept, I just kept thinking, you know, that's cool, but that's not enough. And so we added more of a nightlife element where we had DJs and musical acts. And it was just a way to say, hey, what we're doing is normal. And it worked for 5 years. It was a lot of fun. We, you know, enjoyed 250,000 plus a year in terms of guests. So averaging like 1,700 people on any given weekend, it was a good time.
Yeah. So for over 5 years, I mean, what were some of the, what's like the overall experience you had kind of operating that? And you mentioned, so it was a little bit early.
Yeah. I mean, it was a struggle. It was the struggle bust, right? Because in Vegas, it's fascinating. You know, you're the new girlfriend. And then after a couple of years, you're just the girlfriend, right? It just, we kind of lost the luster and we didn't really carry the, just that wave a little further. And the reason why I say that is, you know, in the beginning, we were really catering heavily to gamers. And then it became the music's too loud. Sorry, it's hard to get rid of. That's my moneymaker. Or, you know, there's too much beer and alcohol and I can't get in because I'm not 21. Oh, okay, that's a little hard too. But regardless of all that, what we did find was it was just this community experience that we developed where, you know, even to this day, you know, people ask me, oh man, I miss Insert Coins, which is exciting. You know, it's a great feeling so that you made a mark in some way, shape, or form. But, you know, at the end of the day, what it was just going in, playing video games with friends, make new friends, find out who actually plays video games. My original business partners were just like, no girls are coming here. And we had a 50-50 split male-female ratio on any given night. And so it showed that, hey, you know what? People do play video games. And then I started to tap into the esports scene and, you know, held events where I remember in 2012, I got like $3,500 from Bud Light. So, you know, hey, the Bud Light esports stuff, we were working on that a long time ago. And they were amazed with this thing called Twitch. Like, what is this thing? You know, so we really had a lot of fun doing esports related stuff, but I couldn't really pull in a large enough crowd to garner, you know, a revenue stream that made sense. And so I started to experiment with more retro games, right? So I did a Tecmo Bowl tournament where, I mean, blew the roof off, you know, an NHL 97 tournament. Everyone came out for that, NFL Blitz. And it was those games that really had more excitement from more the, like, you know, the mainstream audiences that I just wanted to experiment with more and then use that as a transition of, hey, by the way, Madison Square Garden just filled up for an esports event and started to really kind of sow the seeds for what we're seeing today in Las Vegas in terms of esports, just, you know, opportunity.
Yeah. Now, one of the things I love is when I have people on talk about their experience with esports and gaming is like the first time they went to a competition and things like that. Like I look back and I think it was 2005. I tell the story a lot, but 2005, we went to Gameforce, which was, you know, kind of like, I don't know, back then it was like kind of like the old school Babbages. I mean, that's getting super old school.
Wow, Babbages. Well played, sir.
Yeah, that's super old school, but it's like a game, but it was kind of a GameStop-ish kind of place, but called Game Force, and they did a Smash Melee tournament, and I don't even know how we found out about it, to be honest with you, but we went, and it was like a $15 or $20 buy-in. Me and my brother and a couple other buddies went. There was 30-something people. I think it was like a 32-man bracket, something like that, with a couple of play-ins, and it was really cool. Like, when we went through that whole thing, we're like, man, like, I wish there was more of this, but here we were in Louisville, Kentucky, which was, you know, it wasn't LA, it wasn't SoCal, right? It wasn't, I don't know. It was just a really cool experience. It was really, I mean, you know, 2005, right? It was 15 years ago, but it's so cool to see everybody's story, like kind of where they start or like where they had that inflection point where they went to that tournament and like felt, you know, that was only 30 people, right? That wasn't a massive event, but it's still like the same like idea and concept.
Well, it was really, I'm glad you brought up the Smash scene because one of the things that was really funny was when we did our first official like Evo sponsored branded of a party event at Insert Coins, I told all my contacts at the MGM, at Caesars, at the time the Cosmopolitan had just opened. I'm like, you got to see how massive this audience is. And, you know, these are suits. They're like, okay, sure, whatever. And then they came in and they're like, It's a Thursday night. Like, why are there so many people? I'm like, this is what I'm telling you. And then the fascinating part about the whole thing was, number one, it was a clearly 21 and plus audience. But number two, the amount of cash exchanging hands throughout the night, where I was like, guys, spend money on beer and liquor, please. I have to pay the rent. But the casino people saw, these guys are betting on video games. This is a thing. So the money matches, the salty sweets, you know, all these things suddenly started to percolate in the minds in early 2010s of there's something here. And I'm forever a FGC guy, and I'm always going to push that this is the esport that can maybe help be that catalyst to the esports that we all envision. And it's just because it's easy to translate to like the regular man or woman for that matter.
Yeah, I want to get to Reset in just a minute, but I want to go like stick to the point about FGC and get your opinion on maybe why it's not as elevated as it could be, like compared to MOBAs and things like that. Like what is your thought process around that?
So the United States of America does not use the metric system. Why are we trying to use the esports world that works in Asia and Eastern Europe? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just not, you know, what will work for just getting our attention. League of Legends and Dota 2 is a really high barrier of entry, and it's hard to really explain what that is. And I mean, look, to this day, we still see people snicker when you say esports. When you say esports athlete, an American audience is like, okay, yeah, okay, sure. You know, mm-hmm. So there's just a lot of normalization that is yet to really set in. And, you know, as I see it, I have a 10-year-old son, and for him, the way he talks about video games with his friends, it's all good. When I grew up talking about video games, I was like, get out of here, nerd. So, you know, I do think that look at what's happening to Counter-Strike, right? People are moving to Valorant. Why? Maybe that's the American esport that we want. It mixes pieces of fantasy that Overwatch provided, but really shows the skill set of a Counter-Strike GO. So, you know, as I see it, we need to develop our own identity as to what our esports are, because we've been trying for so long to say, oh, look, we are part of this ecosystem, and we are. But if you want to get revenue right now, it's not really working. I mean, how did North America do in League of Legends Worlds this past, you know, couple weekends? Not so well. How many people really know who these players are outside of the bubble that we live in? Probably not that many. You know, we can sit here and talk about Faker and Double Lift and, hey, look at how cool these guys are. But when you say Rick Fox, you know, thanks for all you've done, sir, then people start to listen because there's an understanding. So, you know, it's just making it more accessible to mainstream audiences that I think we need to do, and just not try to be, you know, the decades that esports has been in, whether it's Korea or Europe or Asia.
Yeah, people know how much of an enthusiast I am for Smash Melee because of my brother, Reeve. So basically one of the top Marth players in the world. It's like top 60, top 70, fringe. You know, he's beaten a couple of top 20 players. Actually, he co-streamed with Mango a couple times over the past couple months. So he's been out to SoCal and things like that. Smash Summit, he got a lot of votes for that a couple years ago. Partner streamer on Twitch, all that good stuff. So I followed his journey like really close, like for the past. So he started streaming like 2015. And like really seeing, you know, what entails to be a top 100 player and not a tier one esport. I mean, it's not right. Even close. And there's a lot of reasons why. Now, let me back up for a second on that. Now, the viewership is really it's interesting because you look at a major for Melee and you'll get over 100,000 concurrent viewers. Mm-hmm. And when you tell someone that isn't in the ecosystem, they're like, how many? Like some people have no idea. But the passion with these grassroots community, and especially, I'll go on a tangent, but with Melee, typically when another iteration of the same game comes out, it destroys the prior game.
Right.
How many? Well, there's been what? Four
iterations? Melee.
Now Melee. you're an FGC guy, so you get it. Like, not Melee because of the mechanics, because of the community that's been built. So like, it has survived when every single iteration comes out. Brawl 4. Oh, it's going to go away. It's going to go away, and it never does.
No, and again, it's recognition. You know, show that to. And look, I'll go right back to Insert Coins. The way secured my investment is I showed all my slide decks came with Evo moment number 37, and it was like, listen to the passion of these kids, and that was a small room, but it was loud. And then when I show, you know, a game like Smash, oh, that's Mario, that's Luigi, that's that's Pokemon. Everyone knows what Pokemon is, and so you know, it's really again the whole. I can understand life bars going down or percentages, whatever it may be. And also it's how many copies of Smash Brothers has been sold in the United States. It's a very, very big selling game. I mean, how much is Smash Ultimate right now, right? I mean, it's massive. Mm-hmm. Minecraft. Look what Minecraft is going to do for esports, folks. Minecraft is in Smash. So, you know, it's just going to introduce people like, hey, this is a game that I enjoy. Oh, wait, there's a competitive element. Let me go check that out. Oh, wow. Look at these videos. This is super cool and hype. Hey, there's money. Hey, people are watching. That will grow over time. And I still say the FGC is great because it's just easier to understand.
No, totally agree. I have to watch myself because I'll go on and on and on about Melee and stuff for sure, man. I do want to grab a couple of comments. So Tyler jumped in on LinkedIn. Again, thank you guys for jumping on and asking questions and throwing in a comment here and there if you have a second. Tyler said, Blitz is the only sport game I could get behind. Yeah.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah, thanks, Tyler. Now, here's another point. So Tyler says, teachers laugh when you bring up esports. And so Tyler does a lot of work on the education side.
No, and I'm really glad Tyler's here because, you know, he's dead on. We, you know, Reset is a consultation group first, right? We're doing other things, but working with schools and trying to introduce, you know, esports. One of the things that I started to really see is, and this is, again, this is a personal opinion. I may be very different from a lot of other people. However, the reason why I got into video games is because I didn't want to be part of team sports. I didn't want a coach to yell at me. I just wanted to do my own thing, develop myself and, you know, achieve these goals playing video games that I enjoyed. And the more I saw like esports trying to become this very organized, you know, thing for school, I saw kids were excited, but then there were also kids like, I just want this to be my escape. So I start to really tell, you know, schools, put together your STEM programs, talk about different ways to develop, you know, the things around esports, whether it's computer programming, whether all these things, but also just do a club. There's a chess club, make it an esports club. Let them have fun. Let them discover. Let them see what this is without making this rigid come to practice 5 days a week. And then you're making it work. So, you know, it's a fascinating thing. Esports has so much to develop still. And, you know, again, in terms of teachers laughing, yeah, dude, it happened all the time. It's like, oh, this thing is huge. Look at the numbers. And they're like, yeah, but it's video games. We have a soccer and a football team. So it's work, but keep working because I know we're going to get there.
Yeah, that's an interesting point about like the socialization aspect of it, but also the competitive aspect of it. Mm-hmm. And then when is it supposed to be combined? When is it recreation? When is it regimented 5 days a week, 2.5 hours, right? And you have competitions. So I think we're all trying to figure it out, to be quite honest, because there's a lot of layers, like Tyler was saying. Yeah, he even threw in escapism versus education. I like that. Yeah. So, yeah, Tyler, thanks for bringing that up. Any other thoughts, Tyler? Feel free to throw it in there because I'd like to bring that up for sure. Put a cap here on Reset, kind of what you're doing right now with that. Anything you'd like to add?
Sure. So, I mean, after we closed our doors at Insert Coins, I just decided that video games were a thing. Literally, a month after we closed our doors, Pokemon Go came out. And all my contacts in the casino was like, hey, Chris, this video games thing, it's just kind of a big deal. I'm like, I've been telling you that. So we were consulting and doing a lot of work with casinos. And trying to kind of cultivate video game stuff, anything video game related, so that we can be a friendly city to gamers. And it's a challenge because Las Vegas is a 21 and up audience. And so helping with skill-based gaming to get them on casino floors and just doing the thing. However, over the past 2 years, we've shifted to becoming more of a technology platform to allow people to bet in a venue on video games. And on top of that, to develop kind of a venue experience. And I think it's fascinating that we are having this talk today because they just released another news piece about the Atari Hotel potentially coming to Las Vegas. You know, and it's when you see that gaming world start to just become more commonplace in the American vernacular, that's the opportunity for esports to kind of, you know, develop alongside. So what Reset is right now is what I call the catalyst for esports normalization, and that we're developing a way for people to bet on video games, but do it in a place where it feels like a place for gamers. And I'm not talking about a cheesy giant Mario or Donkey Kong character, just like it's just cool place where an over 21 and up crowd. And now mind you, I'm 43. I'll be closer to retire than most people that are probably listening. I want to retire playing video games in the casino, not a slot machine. So Reset encapsulates all the different ways that we can, as I like to say, reset gaming. And, you know, when I say gaming, it's traditional gaming by way of casino gaming, just as much as just the video gaming world as well.
Yeah, a lot to unpack there. But I go back. always, you know how it is, man. Yeah. So I just take little pieces of it. All I can do is, man, like, it's so exciting. Like, skill-based gaming is so exciting to me because you get to showcase your skill sets that you put in hours upon hours of grinding and, like, learning and just growing, right? So I'm big on that. So won't say the name of who I'm really close with, things like that. Was a former poker player, put in over 1 million hands, you know, back in the good old days. And, you know, someone like that, it's you put in so much time and effort to your craft so that you're able to have an advantage, so that you're able to compete. It's like, it's no different than any other traditional sport. And people know that I'm on the, I come from traditional sports side too, like as far as wrestling. And I've had 15 years of coaching experience in wrestling, and I've coached kids from 5 years old up into college. And, you know, I competed myself. So I'm on kind of both sides of the fence, but it's, man, it's skill-based gaming is showcasing your skill sets. And you if you have that opportunity, that's why I'm excited about platforms where you're able to do that, especially platforms from anywhere and things like that. You can have, you know, a local place, local venue, but also have these online platforms to do so as well. So I'm an advocate for it because it's a place to showcase your skills.
No, and look, Party Poker, rest in peace. You know, as I see it, when I do my talks with a lot of these, you know, Las Vegas businesses, I don't say esports athlete. I say pro gamer, because it's just, it's easier for them to kind of take it in. And, you know, as I see it, I'm a big fan of Las Vegas. Why I moved here. Like, I saw Rounders. I was like, I'm moving to Vegas. Like, that's the spot. And when you look at the history of Vegas, the casino gaming market, right, and how much money a casino made, 80% of that used to be on the gaming floor. Today, it's only 30% at best. So they're looking for something new. And, you know, to really get into the weeds here, skill-based gaming, the poker rooms, right? The poker rooms haven't really opened up yet in Las Vegas because they don't make enough money off of it. So skill-based gaming is still a challenge because there's old Vegas thinking as to, I should press the button this many times and make so much money off of a slot machine because of how fast the money's pouring in. A poker game that's just taking the rake, right? And when the poker explosion came, when Moneymaker became a household name and all those people came in, and it just blew up that segment of casino gaming, everyone got excited. We found a new exciting thing to bet on. That's what esports can do, right? Like, that's literally where someone like yourself, your friend who's the poker player, or anyone who just likes to play video games and wants to have an advantage in a casino, what we need is that Chris Moneymaker moment. You know, it's not when Ninja played with Drake and suddenly video games were big. Now we need that esports moment where everyone can say, hey, I can play this game and win money too, and do it in a casino perhaps. And maybe there's an esports section of a casino floor as there was a poker section of the casino floor. It's a lot that can happen.
Yeah, and then you have the old guard, new guard, having those bridge conversations, right? I mean, ooh, obviously.
It's hard. It's hard.
Yeah, so talk about that bridge, you know.
You know, so, I mean, what it comes down to is you can show them all the numbers in the world, you know, whether it's 100,000 people watching some stream, 150,000 watching one person, or, you know, 1.4 million watching League of Legends Worlds. The challenge that I keep running into is that those numbers are really fantastic, but how much of those numbers are coming out of North America? Las Vegas is what I like to call the mass adoption city of the United States. We want to showcase what everyone loves to do today. They don't really nurture the new and exciting innovations. That's more for your Californians or even like Arlington, Texas. Shout out to you guys for what you guys are doing over there. And now Atlanta as well, in terms of really pushing esports. The numbers don't impress the old guys. We are excited because, I mean, look, I remember when Smash hit 90,000 viewers in Evo. I think that was like 4 years ago. I was like, yo, look, they're really paying attention to us. But there's like 5 million people in North America watching a UFC fight. The numbers don't get the old guys excited yet. And that's okay, though, because, you know, as long as it continues to grow, then we have something. And, you know, I may be a little jaded now, too, because I've had to be told no so many times by these old guys. And I'm starting to say, oh, here's why they're saying not yet. And it's revenue, right? We can talk about esports being a $1 billion industry. 10% of that is consumer spending. That's not what the old guys want to hear. You know, it's just not exciting yet for them. But at least now, you know, 5, 10 years really in esports in Las Vegas, I don't have to explain anymore what Twitch is, which is a good step forward.
Right, exactly. Even just 3, 4 years ago. Well, look how much Twitch has changed too. Like on the mainstream, we bring this up a lot as far as like just chatting. Didn't even exist like 3 years ago. Like IRL, I think started like in 2016. So have no mistake about it. Amazon has something to do with that.
Yeah, look,
obviously, and branching that out and pulling that out as far as because it looked a lot different just 5 years ago and kind of growing out the ecosystem, right? So, go ahead.
No, I was just saying Twitch Prime is essentially, you know. I don't know, esports welfare, right? I mean, it's literally building the audience because they're giving things away for free. And I think it's exciting that, you know, they're really pushing that and helping to create new, you know, uses. I mean, when Las Vegas closed their doors, you know, back in March, every one of my DJ friends all started seeing the value of Twitch, and they started DJing on Twitch. You know, whatever esport that we want to talk about today, all of a sudden now everyone's playing Among Us. And it's like, or let me cut to even last year when I was telling people how people were playing Grand Theft Auto like it was Saturday Night Live, right? Like they were using it as a stage to do entertainment. And so, yeah, Twitch is fascinating in that I like to use it as this is where esports comes from, because kind of that's where it did. But now it's literally just a showcase for amazing creativity.
Mm-hmm. And I do feel now some people don't like it because they feel it dilutes, potentially dilutes esports if you have other things like just chatting and things like that. And so there's been backlash maybe on Twitch in that regard. But I do think there's positives to pull from it, from interaction and then having a trickle down effect for viewers and then again building out. So. Yeah, so I want to grab a couple of questions in just a second. Before we do that, I want to bring up, so we talk about skill-based gaming. I want to talk about like fantasy esports. And of course, we know how huge fantasy sports is. If you've done fantasy football in some form or fashion, DraftKings, FanDuel, or season-long leagues, things like that. You know, myself, been in the league for a long time. But you know how that's going to work. You know, like a platform like Esports One, you know, I know like the Sleeper app.
Sure.
That I think they just added League of Legends like last season, or they're gonna be, or no, I'm sorry, they're gonna be adding it. Like it was added to the platform, but I feel like next season they'll have it. So you have any insight on that?
Yeah, look, I just say the sky's the limit with fantasy esports because, you know, mm-hmm. Let's just go back to fantasy sports as a whole. Okay. I remember doing rotisserie baseball with newspapers probably in the early 90s, right? And if you look at the success of FanDuel and DraftKings and what they did is they cultivated a sports fantasy audience, right? And then over the course of how many years these guys were developing their community, they had an opportunity to put betting on it, and they turned on that light switch. And once they had the, you know, opportunity to take that community and move them to betting, their revenues are massive. And now if you look at, you know, overall in North America, as sports betting jurisdictions start opening up outside of originally Nevada and New Jersey, you know, you're seeing that DraftKings and FanDuel, they just lead the charge, and by a significant amount. And, you know, when I look at the opportunity for people to really see the value in esports, how can I make esports more relevant to more people? And how can I start teaching people who these kids are? Because I think that's another thing that we're really kind of working through is we can talk about Team Liquid and G2 and, you know, all the teams all day long. But how are we educating people on these players, you know, and really going into the history of some of these players and their skill sets? And it is something valuable where esports fantasy actually helps to validate esports as a sport to those old guys I was just talking about.
And again, I know this can get controversial because you're talking about betting, you're talking about fantasy, and that can become on a line. It goes on a line, right? But I do think, like on the fantasy side, it does bring to light the individual athletes more,
right? Right.
Just in my opinion, because you're paying more and different attention to those athletes as they compete. Right.
Look, I think, I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off. Please.
No, go ahead.
No, because my whole thing is like, I think that's one of the most missing components here. I mean, look, you want to talk about controversy. David Beckham gets $25 million to raise money for an esports team that nobody knows. Why did they do that? What is the intrinsic value of a famous person, which he is, to say, hey, I love esports 12 times a year on social media? Is it really worth $25 million? I look at Rogue as the perfect example of this. Rogue had Steve Aoki and the Imagine Dragons and all these other big name people and celebrities invest and become kind of an ambassador. But it wasn't until Rogue went into League of Legends and really started to win that people started to pay attention to them. No one really paid attention to esports because Steve Aoki said so. They paid attention when the players started to really kick ass. And at the end of the day, that's what you want, especially American audiences. Be the best. Show your competitiveness and then show me some character and show me some personality. And daily fantasy sports for esports is perfect for that because now you need to know, oh, I'm a fan of this team. No, I need to know who's playing well. And you start to learn everybody. And it's not just the ones that you like. It's easy to say, I'm a big fan of the NBA because of LeBron James. And any LeBron James haters, I don't want to hear from you. Point being, Point being, and then you start to learn the whole organization, and that's where I think the DFS stuff is so valuable for esports. And I love what those guys are doing, because we need a reason to know these kids more. And at the end of the day, again, I'm in Las Vegas. I'm only looking at 21 and up. So the controversy of betting, I get it. But the average age of a gamer is 35. So I'm looking at betting, and I'm seeing the value of, you know, that industry to educate people more as to what esports really is.
Yeah, average age of a gamer is like 35. And then I think the average age of an esports enthusiast, right, if you don't throw that term out, is like 26. So we're not talking 13 and 17. Some people really do think that. They really think, like, when you tell them 35 and 26, they're like, what?
But I'll challenge that notion only from the perspective of, and why I've been so vocal, you know, to a lot of people, but what's the North American audience? Because, you know, in terms of mass adoption of esports in America, I think it's still very small. I mean, we saw the Overwatch numbers over the past weekend, where, you know, another thanks for what you do, Overwatch, good luck. But, you know, their numbers were 80% Chinese audiences. How many people in the States are esports fans? I look at the Luxor has the esports arena here in Las Vegas, and the average age of their consumer is 16. So it may still be a very young audience in North America. We just don't quite want to admit it yet, because old guys like me are like, no, we were there from the beginning. So, you know, we have to be really honest with ourselves with what this industry looks like and what it's becoming. Because, again, you look at games like Roblox, you look at games like Fortnite, that's what hit the critical mass. It wasn't Counter-Strike Go. It wasn't League of Legends. And, you know, especially from a consistency standpoint, when I see an esports event in the United States, it's always a really big one. Once you start doing weeklies and, you know, all these dailies, I mean, I remember doing that in LAN centers, right? Yeah, we get our friends all together. It's a much smaller audience. We haven't hit that critical mass yet to start doing those things so consistently. And that's where it's still something that we have to develop.
And then amidst all that, obviously this year, 2020, you know, the pandemic and the transition, you know, no more local tournaments. Obviously, I mean, I just think about my brother with the Melee scene, how it, you know, it's right. Obviously changed that.
Crushed it.
Changed it. You know, like, you know, the experience is going to Big House, going out to Vegas and to Evo and things like that. So how that kind of changes the landscape from those land-based events to going online. And it's interesting because I know it's a little bit of a pivot, but it's interesting because then it pushes innovation. Because then Slippy comes out with a new version for those Melee, diehard Melee people. You know what I'm talking about. The new Slippy version.
So give me that rollback code.
Rollback net code, baby, right? So like my brother's been grinding on that as soon as it came out. Like it provided another, I don't know, there's like these little inflection points where it provides opportunity. Because he saw it as an opportunity because some players fell off since then. So they didn't want to do it. They didn't believe in, you know, the net play and all that. So they stopped playing. But he said, no, I'm going to keep going. Like, this is my opportunity to, like, ladder up.
You know, again, when I talk about esports and I talk about video games, it's not because I don't understand or respect what the esports industry is. It's just how that helps esports as a whole. And I look back at what happened with Google Stadia, right? Everyone's like, oh, Google Stadia is this online, you know, video game, this, that, and the third. Guess what? This country doesn't have the infrastructure for that yet. But, you know, when things like COVID-19 happen and people start to realize, wow, internet's really important. Maybe the United States starts really picking up on their internet providers and giving us what we need for online tournaments that's a little more effective, on top of just what developers like Nintendo have to do to ensure that, you know, I mean, the Nintendo Switch didn't even come with a hardwire for internet connections. That's a bad look. So, you know, there's a lot that still has to be done to create that foundation that esports really needs. And, you know, the fighting community, especially watching them, I mean, literally you have kids who are creating their own network code to allow us to play online. And that's great. But we don't have that right now. And that's something that has to be fixed.
Yeah, I don't have the terminology in front of me. But, you know, the technology coming out that's helping with, like, lag integrity. And then, like, if I'm playing from one place pinging and you're playing from the one place pinging, that we have a very close relationship with our ping so that, you know, someone doesn't have a disadvantage. That's something that's potentially overlooked. Like once those things are, that's a huge deal. Like once that's laid out, then you can have fair competition.
Right. I mean, look how many esports events have happened over COVID-19 that, you know, systems shut down. You know, it's happening to the best of us. So, you know, we have time. We're working towards it. I think the NBA started 70 years ago. It got popular in the 80s. So that was like 40 years. We got time. We'll get there.
All right. Want to grab a couple questions or comments from LinkedIn, looks like. See what you guys are saying. See, Terrence said, sweet insight on the old guys. It's, you know, I think it kind of is what it is. You know, you said it. I mean, those conversations, there's got to be a bridge. There's got to be an understanding. And there's going to be that inflection point where it just ends up making sense. I don't know how else to say that, but.
It's generational, you know. And oh, go ahead. Next question.
Oh, yeah, this is from earlier. But so instead of having 120 TVs with different sports games,
right,
you can put popular streamers on them.
100%. And then imagine being able to bet on, you know, whether or not you'll see, you know, an elimination in the next 20 seconds. And if you look at what Twitch is doing right now, it's kind of slick. If you look behind what's going on, you know, on Thursday Night Football, right, where you can choose, is it going to be a pass or a run on their mm-hmm. Twitch platform? So they're already experimenting with it. And, you know, again, I'm a Vegas guy, so I'm looking at this from a Vegas, you know, opportunity. We are a one-trick pony in Las Vegas, and that we are casinos. And the idea of eventually, you know, in-game betting, a lot of companies are already trying to do that. You have your unicorns, you have your players' lounges. They're all out there. It's just, does it work for American audiences right now? That's yet to be determined.
Mm-hmm. And again, we mentioned, like, the PvP flat platforms.
Right.
Like on apps and things like that, like just it's coming because the conversation, yep. Like these companies are being built, these platforms are being built, and it's an arms race for sure.
It really is.
If you know behind the scenes, like right now, yeah. it's really heated right now.
There's got to be like 12 of them at least.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, they're vying, and it's still, or obviously it's still technically early, but mm-hmm. again, the pedal's on the floor because of where we are right now. That in 2019, that pedal was not pushed down as hard.
Right.
It just wasn't. So again, the ones that win on those like PvP platforms, they're going to be big winners. But again, it's that race to get there. But yeah, going back to like Twitch and like overlaying that's engagement.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to talk about it for a second because it's really interesting. We talk about metrics and you talk about like views, in my opinion, isn't necessarily engagement.
No,
you know, and we talked about this. We did the casino esports conference 2 weeks ago on GamerJobs platform. And we were talking about that, how, you know, there could be a million views, but then how do you measure engagement off of that? Things such as overlaying engagement opportunities. Like if you're watching an NFL game, is it going to be a run or a pass, right? And then you get points based on that. And then there's prop overlays or whatever. So that keeps you more engaged. It's another form of fantasy, right? It's another form of fantasy. So, right. But it's even more engaging in my opinion, because it's within, like it's in game, right? So talk about that a little bit on your opinion on like stuff.
And I think that's exactly what we're, you know, leading into. To give a little bit of history, Las Vegas, the casinos in terms of how they operate, we have a thing called pay tables, and it's, you know, how much money a square foot of a casino floor is expected to make, whether it's because of a casino, a craps table or a slot machine. And, you know, betting on esports, that takes a long time, right? How long does an esports match take? I mean, it's a whole month of esports events. You know what I mean? Like it could be a long time. So when you start integrating the opportunity to in play betting, that gets exciting for the casino operators because they could see that there's more, you know, just movement of cash and there's more action that's happening. And, you know, just to really kind of go a little left field, but it's the same thing. Vegas is looking at this even in the most spectacularly odd ways where, you know, it doesn't really, I don't think I messed with an NDA on this one. No, I don't. There's a gentleman who is creating a concept where you can have real football teams playing against each other. And the people in the audience downloaded an app and they would pick what play should be picked next. And then it surveyed everyone. And the most popular play was then executed by the teams. I mean, that's literally real life video games. And so it's that kind of engagement that they're already looking at that's super necessary because, look, anyone could just sit there and look at a screen. Yeah, all right, that's exciting. But especially as we look for monetization in esports, it's all these crazy ideas that I'm hoping that, you know, over the past 6 months, people are really just kind of getting down and dirty, doing a little internal observations, figuring out, hey, how can I make a difference in the esports community and the technologies? Because all you have to do is attack humans. It's all it is. It's what does the human want? It's excitement. It's entertainment. And yeah, in play is the way.
Well, that, and then I've also think about just like a real slick mobile UI UX. Obviously, that's what everyone's working on.
Yeah,
these platforms, you know, obviously I'm saying obvious here. you know, but like, but something that's real slick UI UX on mobile, right? And it's not, it's, it doesn't kind of degrade the experience that you're watching, things like that. So it's going to be really cool to see what happens to all of it. All right, so we'll kind of bounce around a little bit. If you have a question or comment for Chris, feel free to jump in. We have a few more minutes, and then we will jump off of here. But Tyler jumped in on another topic earlier. Great points around infrastructure. There is such a gap. The students in rural schools get their internet from the school.
Yeah. No, and you know, this is where I also tip my hat to a lot of the innovators, right? Like, I like to be hypercritical of esports. It's because I want to see it win. And one of the things I was really excited to see was what the guys at Vindex are doing, where they're just creating, and let's not call them esports arenas. I get that's what we call them, but they're just building LAN centers everywhere. And I think that's great because it gives kids the accessibility. I got into esports because I used to play arcades in a bar that I wasn't allowed in. Thankfully, my father was law enforcement, and I kind of got away with a lot of things I probably shouldn't have, but they're like, oh, you're Laporte's son. I'm like, yeah, like, all right, just don't drink anything. No problem. And I'm playing, you know, Street Fighter in a bar, right? So the more social venues and opportunities for people to play video games and esports that becomes accessible, you know, right now, from my perspective, esports is golf, right? Like, it's expensive to get into. I have a really expensive computer that I have to use, and you don't have to use it, but you kind of want it. So, you know, it's an expensive thing to get involved with. So I'm always happy to see the schools are doing it, and you know, the guys at Vindex, I tip the hat, because the more opportunity, the more that normalizes the scene, the better.
I think that's a great point, and Tyler talks about it on LinkedIn a lot, because he makes a lot of really good posts about inclusivity. Yep. Because it can be exclusive in a sense because of technology, you know, and if these, you know, talk about education and these kids, you know, if they don't have access to it, they can't be a part of it. Right. So Tyler, I know Tyler, you talk about that a lot, man. So just, you know, keep that going. And it is about awareness too, and programs being built to fill the needs for those kids and the education, especially in the environment we're in right now. Right. So, yeah, when he went on to say inclusivity earlier as well. So
yeah, you know, I always like to make the point that Nintendo had that great, I mean, I thought it was a great marketing campaign when they said that I am not a gamer, and all it did was piss off the gamers. And I was like, that's the point. You know, we can't be just so, you know, oh, you play mobile games, you're not a real gamer. You know, there's just too many things that this community has to work and develop to make us seem a little more attractive to mainstream audiences.
So what's next for you over the next year or so? Like, what's coming up for you that you potentially can share? I know that you said NDA earlier, so I don't
know. No, it's all good. Look, I mean, at the end of the day, all I want to do is continue to make esports and video games relevant to Las Vegas. You know, like I said, this Atari hotel thing is fascinating to see because that was something scoffed at maybe 5 years ago. With Reset, what we're really trying to do and what we're going to accomplish is just create another opportunity to make Vegas more accessible to gamers and to help the development of what I call, you know, Reset Gaming, where maybe it's not slot machines that we're playing in 10 years. Maybe it's just more fun, old school game mechanic games that are an opportunity for people who are watching and just young people to say, hey, maybe we're not playing League of Legends 20 years from now. Maybe it's a brand new game altogether. And, you know, there's opportunity. And that's why I'm such a big fan of indie game developing, is that, you know, there can be new games that can be created that can essentially be used for the casino organization. And it's not an industry to scoff at, right? It's a lot bigger than the video game industry. So, you know, as we look to entertain gamers in a more adult environment, you know, that's what Reset's looking to lead the charge on.
Yeah, and going back to like the CEC conference like 2 weeks ago, you know, I could see these operators, you know, having, you know, holding tournaments, a lot more tournaments than they have in there. I mean, you know, there's been only a few of them, but holding these tournaments, and again, a place for players to showcase their skill sets to win, right? For opportunity. And then to kind of translate their talent into opportunity for themselves. So it's going to happen. Again, it's going to come down to the early adopters. I think it was said like 2 weeks ago too, you know, the ones that adopt it early, that execute on it, and it's going to create this huge gap between those who don't. So right. You really have to, I mean, they have to figure it out. So, So let me jump on real quick. So Tyler's got something else. Anyone who is on LinkedIn is probably a parent. They probably have kids who game. We have to be creative. Tyler, to your point, one of the things is, I think I said this yesterday too, you know, I'm just trying to learn and just try to have some kind of like a continuing pulse on the space as much as possible, and just connect with people as much as I can, just build relationships with people as much as I can to learn. One of the reasons, it's kind of selfishly for my kids, because I want to know how to get them connected in all those different ways, from middle school to high school opportunities, to maybe transition into college to play for an esports team. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, as a parent, I feel like I need to know these things, and I need to be able to guide them in the right direction as almost a quasi coach. Like, you know, what schools are going to have the best, COD teams, things like that, and like the pipeline to get there, if they want to do that, or they can do a traditional sport. But it needs to come along. You need to have some type of education as a parent to give them the opportunity, versus your kid saying, I want to be an esports athlete. And then you just like X, like, no, that doesn't exist. Like, you need to understand enough to get them through that process.
You know, and just to tap into that, I still, again, as big of a fan I am of esports, I always got to keep it funky. There's 75 million people a month playing Call of Duty Warzone. There was 330,000 people watching Call of Duty's finals. That's less than 0.5% of the audience who's engaged with esports. We are very far away. And I know this because, as I told you before we were live, I have a next door neighbor who has a kid the same age as my kid. And that father refuses to let his kid get into video games the way I let my son play video games. And it's out there, you know, so we have a lot of work where, and it's not just parents, it's also the kids, you know. Esports develop by way of community. And I like to really preach about this because we've lost sight of that. I'm convinced we've lost sight of that. Now all it is here's the big numbers, give me the big Series A and all this money, and watch me set it on fire, because that's what's happening. The way to really to shorten that gap is more involvement from the communities themselves. Just get out there more, do more things. And Twitch is a great thing that you talked about, right? It's not just esports. It's just chatting. It's Among Us, right? Where did Among Us come from? Nowhere. But suddenly it's a American story. And so there has to still be a lot more of this normalization that comes from just more understanding of what esports is. And, you know, we got a long way to go.
And again, I think the youth might get overlooked, because I think like you're saying, the attention is $25 to $30 million franchise teams. It's and the Series A's, like, you know what I'm saying? Those are the headlines, not youth education. Mm-hmm. And how esports can get kids more engaged, because they got to keep their GPA at 3.5 in order to be a part of the esports club. Like, that's huge.
No, and I keep saying, like, this whole pandemic, as much as it has been an absolute tragedy in so many fronts, the fascinating part is that we are stuck inside, yet my kid can play with all of his friends that he goes to school with and play soccer with. I didn't have that when I was growing up. I was going online, and it was like age, sex, location, who are you? And I'm playing with some dude from Eastern Europe. So, like, you know, there's a lot that the general acceptance of video game culture, it's just cultural. You know, I was Gen X. We were a small percentage of people who love video games. Then you have your millennials and your Gen Z and Gen Y and Gen all these things. It just got incrementally larger, where it's more appreciated, more understood. So, you know, we can keep pumping money into it so we can push this thing further, which I appreciate that happening, because it does give validity as a business, and that's what we need. However, at the same time, you know, it's really about what the kids want. You know, what are the kids doing?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Tyler said ASL. Yeah. okay. Well, we're going to wrap it up. They can find you. So on Twitter, your Twitter handle is Chris of Coins. Is that correct?
Yep. Chris of Coins, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn. You got my full name right there. I'm always happy to just talk and, you know, just find ways so that as we continue to develop esports, it becomes more of a revenue generating industry versus, you know, capital raising industry, and, you know, get somewhere big that we're all trying to climb that mountain. We're all going up different paths, but, you know, we all want to get to the top of the mountain. We're almost there.